All right, welcome to the long-promised King's Quest episode of the Retro Game Club podcast. This is probably the first episode in Season 3, and with me, as always, is Hugh.
What's going on?
Not much. We actually just recorded our last episode, so it's like I just talked to you.
just a minute ago. I already added a news item for our potential first real episode of the year.
Yeah. First non-specialized episode. Well, cool. Let's dive into this. I've been wanting to talk about King's Quest for a while.
So when did you get into the series? Like, you seem to be a big fan of the series.
When did
this kind of click for you?
Yeah, and so growing up, my cousin had an Apple II at his house. And shortly after that, we got an Apple II GS. And even though the first King, we'll get into this, even though the first King's Quest game was made for the IBM PC Junior, they are huge on Apple. And so instantly the game connected with me and I just loved it. And all the sequels too, I was always excited when they came out and most of them delivered. So they've really just been a big part of my life, you know? How about you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I probably first saw them on early PC. Mm-hmm. And this is why it's been interesting. So like I really had a hard time getting into them because of the constant cheap deaths. And then some years later I discovered LucasArts games and said, oh, I like this style of game better.
I think most people do. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, you know, it depends. Like I would say like the King's Quest games, especially the later ones, maybe have a better art style than the LucasArts games. Arguably better music in most cases, but mm-hmm. I guess I'll just start talking about the games and see where this goes.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to start out with, we're not going to get all the facts right. We never claim to be experts on anything. So please, if we say anything that's wrong, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net and correct us. Please don't be mean. But it was really first released in 83 and 84. It was really a series that was responsible for kind of giving Sierra Online their reputation as being a great game company. And it was created by Ken and Roberta Williams. They're both co-founders of Sierra. And coded by Ken and written by Roberta. Mm-hmm. It used the Adventure Game Interpreter, AGI, which is really just a game engine that Ken wrote. And now it's supported on Scum VM.
Yes.
And there's a prelude to King's Quest that is called Wizard and the Princess. It's not great. It's really, really early. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have any comments on that one.
No, I did play it a little. I will just say one thing. Like when I've listened to interviews with Ken Williams, he comes across as someone that would be just as happy writing like an accounting program as he would doing games. You know, like it was a thing that he could make money doing. And I think he liked running the business side of it as well. And yeah, Roberta Williams is really the one. Yeah. She was the creative mind. Yeah. Yeah, that was just kind of interesting that he wasn't especially passionate about games. You know, I did play this a little bit, and it really feels like a Zork game. Mm-hmm. Because you just are kind of plopped into a world, and there's not many tips. like I had no idea what I was doing. You're basically in what looks like an old West town, and I had no idea. Maybe there's a manual. Like a lot of these games came with, you know, big, elegant boxes with manuals and whatnot. Maybe there's something to help you out, but I just had no idea what I was doing. And what was kind of cool is like the graphics reminded me a lot of like, I don't know, when you were a kid, if you would get like programming magazines, you know, these are still in the grocery store, you know, Family mm-hmm. Computing, that kind of junk. And there'd be like demo programs to, you know, write Apple graphics and stuff. And like the whole way that the graphics drew and filled and everything in this game reminded me of these like really horrible programs I wrote around that time.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. But I mean, the only reason really to mention this game is that it takes place in Serenia, which is a place that some of the King's Quests take place as well. And there's also the evil wizard named Harlan, who does make a reappearance. So that's really the only reason to mention that. King's Quest, the first one, Quest for the Crown, starts out with a young knight, Sir Graham, who must save the kingdom of Daventry, where most King's Quests take place, and to become king, really. And it was originally built for the IBM PC Junior. It really saved the company, IBM asking Sierra to do this. But
it saved Sierra, not IBM.
Yes, yes. And quickly ported to, you know, Apple II, Apple II GS, Atari, Amiga, really everything, even the Master System. And, yeah, you have to get the three treasures to save the kingdom. You need the chest of gold from the clouds, the shield from the leprechauns, and the mirror from the dragon. It's a simple game, but I think this is a fantastic game. One thing we didn't mention is this is, you know, use your arrow buttons to walk around, and then you type, you know, stuff like move rock or look or something like that. I think it's funny that the speed run of this is a minute and 40 seconds, since most people would spend weeks on this game.
Yeah, I mean, I did watch a speed run in, you know, so when part of the speed run is basically that you're taking advantage of clock speed.
Yes.
Right. You're actually playing the game quickly. It's that this game was designed to run on a particular, you know, type of CPU running at a particular speed or range of speeds. And yeah, if you run it on a modern computer, it's not the clock is going to be messed up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could also adjust your play speed too. Yeah. But I don't think that fast.
Yeah, and the games themselves are really short. I kind of compare this to like a Mac Venture game, in that once you know the solution, it's a very, very short game. And the gameplay length all comes from just like the constant deaths for making mistakes.
Yeah, which are funny and frustrating at times. That's one thing we haven't mentioned, that this game kind of created the do one thing, save, do the next thing, save. Then you die, you load that previous save, or you forgot to do something at the very beginning and you have to go all the way back and, you know, start over again, or at least to a very early save. And that frustrates a lot of modern gamers. But I think if you're someone our age who, you know, may have grown up with this, it's not that frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, if it's what you know, right.
Yeah.
I guess getting up every morning and like churning your own butter wouldn't be frustrating to some.
Yeah, if you're used to it.
Yeah. So this one, I've mostly played the Sega Master System version. I watched some side-by-side playthroughs just because it had been a long time, and it really doesn't look that different than the PC version. Like, there's some rooms where the perspective is mirrored. Mm-hmm. Like, some like layout things are just different. Obviously, you're limited, you know, you can only do command, you know, you're limited in what commands you have on the Master System. Mm-hmm. But looks like the full game. I don't really see any content that was removed.
Cool. I haven't seen that one, so I'll have to look at it.
Yeah, I would say I don't know what that goes for. I assume because it's a Master System game and it's, you know, got adventure-ish elements, it's going to be really expensive. Mm-hmm. But that's a really like accessible way to play the game, like, because you just no configuration, there's no DOS box. Loose carts of it are $40, and with the box, it's $85.
Yeah, that's
nuts. What I figured. Yeah, because I bet this wasn't like a huge seller either. Like, I'm looking at the box, I don't even recognize the box art.
Wow.
Yeah, it looks like Parker Brothers did the port.
That's interesting.
Yeah, well, there's a whole bunch of credit. Yeah, Parker Brothers did the port. Because they did a few Master System ports. I don't mean to get off topic with the history of Parker Brothers Master System ports, but... I realize most people are just going to emulate it, but that's a good way to play this game. By the time we record this, maybe DOSBox Pure is a real product that you can use.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that'll be one of the first topics we talk about next season. King's Quest II, Romancing the Throne, a play in words on the movie Romancing the Stone, from 1985. This was, you know, on all the same systems, and the mirror shows Graham a beautiful woman, and then he, I guess, has to go to the land of Kolim. How do you pronounce it? Kolima, I guess.
There isn't voice acting, so I don't know what's official here.
Yeah, but yeah. Apparently, he sees a woman in a mirror, and he decides he has to go find her and make her his wife. And to me, this game was a bit samey for King's Quest One. I guess there's a few improvements.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. On an unrelated note, I was thinking about video game sequels last night, and how Part 3 in the series is typically either like where the series becomes what you recognize it as today, or it is like a complete oddball game, and Part 4 is more like the original two games.
Mm-hmm.
How you see that a lot, because I think what happens is game developers write a game and it's a surprise success, so they crank out a sequel really, really quickly, and the sequel really isn't any different. They haven't really thought about what they want to do with the series. So the sequel is more or less the same as the first game. And then Part 3, you start to try some new ideas out.
Yeah. The second game is always like, well, I guess we had time to clean up our code and make it a bit flashier. That's about it.
Right. And that's kind of what strikes me. It's like the game, like King's Quest 1 was, you know, a big hit for them. So they kind of, I won't say rushed out. I mean, it's a good period of time between the two. But, you know, that they really didn't change the game engine or the game design philosophy very much.
But also the first one, you know, it doesn't have, I don't know the right word I'm looking for, IP-based villains or themes. You know, there's leprechauns. I guess there's Rumpelstiltskin, which would be really one of the only ones. But then in number two, you have Dracula, you have Little Red Riding Hood and mm-hmm. the wolf. You have a few other things, and you're sort of
the precursor to that Disney show that was out a few years ago with
it's like Epic Mickey or something.
Not Epic Mickey. No, this was a TV show with like actors and stuff, and it was like all the fairy tale characters that have ever existed live in this land, but it's modern day Connecticut or something.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, and I can't think of it either. I'm sure there's listeners screaming at their speakers right now.
It's one of these shows I only watched because my wife did college theater with someone in it.
Oh, nice. I want to mention that there are advertisements for... There are two or three advertisements for Space Quest 1 within King's Quest 2, which you mm-hmm. actually get points for watching.
Yeah. Yeah, this... Like, Sierra was really guilty of doing this, and... Even though I like LucasArts, I mean, LucasArts blatantly put ads for their other games in mm-hmm. their games.
Should we move on to number three?
Yeah.
So number three has my, I think, favorite box art of all time. I remember getting this as a kid. We got it with our Apple II GS. I couldn't believe how cool it was. I'm not going to say this is my favorite game, but I think it has one of the coolest stories. You are Gwydion, who is a slave to the wizard Manon, and it starts out at his house, which has a farm next to it, and you have to do these chores, and you have to... He leaves for 10 minutes at a time. He'll either take a nap, or he'll go on a quest. He'll just vanish. He'll tell you before he does each thing. And you go around collecting magic items and hiding them on your bed to eventually... I don't want to spoil it really, because it's fun when it happens, but you defeat him with his own magic, and then you have to venture across the land, across the ocean, where you find that you are actually King Graham's son, Alexander. And I just said I wasn't going to spoil anything, but I just did. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Pretty badly, too.
Yes.
So going back to my part three,
I'm not going to edit that out.
Yeah. This is a game that completely fits my part three statement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like we, you know, King's Quest 1, King's Quest 2, kind of the same game. King's Quest 3, it's like, let's go a completely different direction. You know, new lead character, different style of story. It's like the Halloween 3 of the series, really, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, like, we don't want to keep doing the same game over and over again, so we're just going to shift gears entirely, which was the point of Halloween 3, right?
It's done really well, too. I think you noted here that it kind of starts the fast travel map. I don't remember a game before this that had a fast travel like that.
Yeah, I put it down. I kind of had two notes. Like, one, the graphical style of this game is now, like, when I think of King's Quest, this was, like, the first game that had the graphical style that I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, yeah, like, I'm sure there were other games that had fast travel before it. That's why in the notes I put early example. Because I don't know if there was a game with fast travel before it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't think of one, but... my notes here are, the wizard legit scared me. He was an evil man, and he would end you pretty quickly if you got caught with his magic items. And, crossing the ocean really felt like an accomplishment. It took me a long time as a kid to actually do it. And the spell book. So this is the way they did copy protection in this game, is that you got a spell book with your discs. And eventually you would get into the basement of the castle or house, whatever it is that the wizard lives in.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the stuff you've collected, you would make these, you know, magic potions and spells. And you have to type them in exactly from the book. And this really mystical, really, I guess, intense music would play as you did it. And it felt like an accomplishment each time. But if you didn't have that book, you couldn't do this. So now if you go back and replay it, you know, you could download, you know, the text file of the book. And you just have to be forewarned that the Apple one is different from the PC one, and the PC one's different than the Amiga one. So make sure you get the correct one when you do it. And I highly suggest playing this game. My only complaint at all is that the castle is at the top of a hill, and you have to, even with the fast travel map, you have to walk up or down the mountain or hill, whatever it is. And there's parts where there's rocks right in front of the view on purpose, just to make it easier to fall off the cliff. It's just so, I just thought that was so cheap even as a kid. But want to move on to number four? Have you ever played the fourth one in the series?
No, I have not. So just looking at the time it was out, I did not have a modern computer, I'm sure, at that point in life.
You watch videos of it?
But I did watch. Okay. This is another one where I did watch a playthrough.
Okay, this is, King's Quest IV, The Perils of Rosella. And it starts immediately after King's Quest III. So, you know, you're now with your family, and King Graham pretty much has a heart attack, and the magic mirror kind of tells you, like, hey, you could go to this land and do something or get magic fruit to heal King Graham. And Rosella takes his adventurer's cap and goes to the land. And it's a big, fun adventure. I would just like to say that this game, I'm pretty sure, won awards for its graphics. It mm-hmm. uses this beautiful kind of painted background. To this day, they impress me. It's such a beautiful game. What kind of notes do you have for this one?
So I thought, compared to the other games, this felt more like it was a comedy game. Like, it's not that there wasn't humor in other King's Quest games, but it seems like this was almost entirely a comedy game, more than, like, if I was going to make a parody of King's Quest that was just like a lot of jokes strung together, that's kind of how this came across to me.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of references to Sierra games, I think more than even the previous ones. Mm-hmm. But the things that are kind of neat, so it mentioned, like, there's like a time limit, like you have to finish it within a certain amount of real world time,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot like the game D, which you probably never played. It was a Sega Saturn game. I think there's a PlayStation version too. And the other thing, like, there's puzzles that you have to solve at like specific times of day. You know, like there's events in the world and you have to be there at the right time to solve the puzzle. Mm-hmm. So other games like post this have done it. But before it, there was a text adventure called The Count. Have you played that?
No, I have not.
So it was a very early text adventure by Scott Adams, not the Dilbert Scott Adams, the other Scott Adams. Mm-hmm. And it's a game where you're like a Dracula hunter. I guess you are the Dracula hunter, right? I don't think they called him Dracula. It's been a long time since I played it. But it takes place over 3 days. And yeah, at certain times of day, certain puzzles are available. Mm-hmm. Which when I played it, when I was, you know, whatever age, fairly young, I just thought that was amazing. Like, games can't get more advanced than that. It's my first impression.
Yeah, yeah, I know that feeling. One thing I forgot to mention is that in King's Quest III, spoiler again, you do run into Rosella, and she in King's Quest III is very top-heavy and animated in that way. I almost want to say maybe I'm trying to keep it family friendly. Darkstalkers-esque, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. They animate that parts of the body where it doesn't really add anything to the story. It's almost distracting. Where in King's Quest IV, they really tone that down. Her sprite, you know, is
okay. So
very normal.
Now, I think I have a theory as to why.
Go on.
So, in King's Quest III, one of the lead developers was Al Lowe of Leisure Suit Larry fame, and he did not work as much on King's Quest IV.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. Yeah, it was very Leisure Suit Larry. And it only lasts for a few minutes, but it's just like, oh, I forgot about that part. I would say King's Quest IV is one of the best King's Quest games. It's again, it was award-winning. I think a lot of people were going to be afraid that it was just the same game, but you're playing as a female, but it wasn't at all. Very, very fun little puzzles and a pretty good story, too. You know, you really want to save King Graham, especially if you played the first three games. You are attached to the family, you know. So, yeah, if you don't have anything else to say about King's Quest IV, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but King's Quest V is the one you're more familiar with. So I don't know if
I was just double checking the timeline to confirm that I was not making that up. And yeah, I was not. Because Leisure Suit Larry came out between King's Quest III and IV, which is when Al Lowe, I don't think that those were published by Sierra, weren't they?
Oh yeah, those are Sierra games, yeah.
Yeah. So that became more of his focus. So like, you can see that that type, his influence on King's Quest III versus the other games.
Yeah. Want to take number five?
So King's Quest V is probably the one I've played the most. And strangely, I first played through it on NES. Mm-hmm. don't know why. I think because I had an NES and I was working at a game store. And when stuff went on clearance, I could get it for a couple dollars. What's the story here? The castle disappears?
Yeah, your King Graham was walking around and the whole family was in the castle, and as he was walking back, the castle mysteriously disappeared before his eyes, and then a Cedric the Talking Owl kind of told him what was up with all that. And part of this is where it really connects back to the Wizard and the Princess, because it explains why Daventry, or that land, used to be all one continent, but in King's Quest III, there was a big ocean, and yada, yada, yada. I'll let our listeners do that research if they want. It's boring unless you're really tied into all these games.
Yeah, so then once I kind of got into the game, you know, years and years later, I picked up, like, the PC CD-ROM versions. This is a fairly cheap game to collect, because there's floppy versions, there's CD versions, there's multiple CD versions. Like, there's, you know, 256 color version and so on. And, you know, on PC, it obviously looks and sounds a lot better than NES. The puzzles are roughly the same. I mean, the NES, you know, like the Master System port, the layouts are a little different. Mm-hmm. And your commands, maybe, I think it's really the same range of commands Just the user interface in the NES is a little hard to get used to.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the first one that's a point-and-click adventure instead of a typing mm-hmm. adventure.
Yeah, yeah. But the way that menu works on the NES is a little awkward. Part of it is like just you're limited in the color palette, and it uses like icons for the actions, but a lot of them kind of blur together.
Because it's 8-bit, and yeah, this was one of the first VGA games from Sierra, and the previous games, if you got them on Apple II GS, it was enhanced. I don't know if it was VGA or not, but you know, the GS stands for graphics and sound, so you did get a better experience than other systems there, but this is the first one that around the board was just, yeah, a lot more pixels and colors.
What did I write down here? Oh yeah, the puzzles are basically nonsense. not that that's a new addition to the series, but they felt extra sort of nonsensey to me.
Well, this one I haven't played in a while. I have finished it a few times. I probably finished this one 5 or 6 times. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a part in this one where you have to walk into the desert to the west, and you have to go through the desert in a certain pattern. So each screen a certain pattern, and really, you know, or you'll just
drop over dead.
Yeah, and of starvation and stuff. So, and it's really guess and check, right? You just have to save.
Yeah, save and walk. Yeah, and keep trying. Yeah, that's fairly early in the game too. So it's a great way to make you rage quit early on.
This is a fantastic game. I should say, yeah, King's Quest V is called Absence Makes the Heart Grow Yonder, because you're wandering, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I overall like this one, even though it is, you know, kind of frustrating. I mean, all the games are a little bit frustrating, but I felt like the, you know, the scenery and the music and everything kind of made up for it. You know, made it worth playing for me, at least.
Oh, totally. And I've tried the NES one, and it really didn't speak to me just because I wanted the better graphics and stuff. And you know, I like being able to do the right click on the mouse to flip through, you know, your commands. You have see, walk, touch. There's got to be more. And then, you know, you left click to actually do that on an item. And that was carried through the rest of the series. And I thought that was pretty cool. I think that was the first game that did that as well. I'm probably wrong. But want to move on to number 6?
Just real quick, though. I just want to call out that over on Overclocked Remix, there is a really great remix of the main music from this game. It's an old one. It's like from 2002, which is when the site was still fairly new.
Yeah.
But I really, really like the this one.
Yeah, and it was highly rated too. Again, you know, because number 4 was award winning. It had big shoes to fill, and it definitely did that. And then the next one, King's Quest VI, Air Today, Gone Tomorrow. I think this is my actual favorite in the series. This is from 1992. I remember saving my money and buying the big box of this for DOS, but then I've told the story in a few other episodes, so I won't again, but I was able to cheaply buy a really, really, really nice Macintosh off my aunt for very cheap, and so I called Sierra online, and I told them the story, like, hey, I just got this new computer, and I also just bought your game for DOS. How can I not spend money and legally just get it at Mac? And they're like, oh, people do this all the time. Just send us disk 1 and we'll send you all the disks for Mac. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Yeah. And they did it. And like a week later, I had a Mac version of it. But this one is more, this is from 92. This is more of an Arabian Nights theme. And you play Alexander, who is looking for a female that he saw a vision of, I think. Oh, no, he met her once and then saw a vision. I forget exactly what it was. I just remember, like, geez, I mean, obsessed much?
Anyway. Yeah. I think that might be a felony, technically.
Yes. And so you travel via boat, via ship to the Land of the Green Isles. This brings back the fast travel map, and that's how you get from island to island. It all circles around, you're trying to find this woman, and it all circles around really this one store that, kind of a pawn shop, and there's certain things on the counter of the pawn shop, and you start by trading something you have to get one of those, and then you keep trading back, so you kind of have to do that in the right order. There are so many cool puzzles around that where, you know, you're on this one island, and the, I think they're gnomes. One has big eyes, one has big ears, one has a big nose, yada, yada, yada. And you have to show them stuff in order. So the one with the big ears, you know, you have this little raven toy that sings. You play the raven toy to him. The one that has big eyes, you know, you put the invisible lotion or whatever liquid on yourself. I forget what the other ones are, but maybe a nice smelling flower for the one with the big nose. And you have to know how to do that in the right order. You have to have all the right items, or they, you know, straight up murder you. And just a lot of cool puzzles that don't seem to get old. You have to fight a Minotaur, and, you know, his death is pretty funny. And I would just say, I have to say that since this is mostly a CD game, even though I had the disc version, I find the commentary, the audio commentary, to be not great, because anytime you do something, the announcer says what you're doing. It's nice when he's reading the dialogue and stuff, but when he says what you're doing every second, it just gets so old. But yeah, what did you have to say about this one?
Yeah, I haven't really played this one. I mean, I mostly remember it. I mostly remember it from being in the game store, mm-hmm. as a kind of a big. It was a game that a lot of people bought when they bought their first CD-ROM drive, mm-hmm. and it was a pack-in with a lot of like $600 2X CD drives. So it was like a game that you got to like maximize your visual experience when you bought your shiny new 2X CD drive.
It is a very nice game and a very nice sounding game. And I forgot to mention the early 3D graphics in the beginning, the intro of the game, the pre-rendered 3D graphics. They blew me away at the time, especially the ocean scenery. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You wanted to mention the speed runs you watched?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just to kind of get an idea what the game was like, I watched the All Deaths speed run. Which is where you attempt to, I guess, die every way that you possibly can in the game, which was kind of funny. Except there's like 100 deaths.
Yeah, and they're all unique too, yeah. Yeah, and that's actually the most difficult speedrun, I think, for King's Quest VI. And it's one of the early, not that early game, but it does have multiple endings, so you get to choose... It takes longer to get them, but I think it's worth it. And King's Quest VII, The Princess Bride. Mm-hmm. Rosella is going to be a bride, blah, 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 blah. This is one of the worst games ever made, maybe. It plays pretty much the same as the rest, except it has kind of a new, really bad animation style. There are no redeeming qualities of this game at all. I mean, literally, you have to go to the Land of Ooga Booga. That's how lazy the writing is in this game. Do you have anything to say about this one?
No. I mean, I at this point was, I think, close to being done working at a game store. Would you? Well, no, I guess I wasn't. I mean, it's very cartoony, right? It's like it looks like a putt-putt game more than a King's Quest game. You've probably played the putt-putt games, have you? Your kids are too young to have played those.
Yes. To me, it looked like a very, 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 very horribly done Dragon's Lair kind of graphics.
Okay.
Not as big and beautiful, just small and garbagey. I don't know if you can tell, I really do not like this game. It has no soul.
Seems like it, yeah. It looks okay. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't look anything like the other games.
And it was just in a time period that, you know, things were becoming 3D. They didn't really do that, but they tried to take the 2D further, and they just went in the wrong direction with that. You know, it's probably good they didn't go 3D then, but they just went the wrong direction visually and script-wise. It just feels totally phoned in. And it's probably why I never played King's Quest VIII. You know, King's Quest VIII, Mask of Eternity came out in 1998.
This was after Sierra was no longer an independent company, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, this is a time period where I wasn't playing that many games, you know, maybe just my Nintendo 64 a bit. And it's a third and first person, mostly third person point and click still. And you play as Connor, who just kind of lives in Daventry, and the magic mirror shows bad omen, yada, yada, yada. I'm not going to get into the game story much, but what I am going to say is that I am going to play this game soon. I read a lot about it. I watched a lot of videos on it. It's an earlier 3D game, but like I said, it is still mostly point and click, and it was very well reviewed. You know, the games you remember from like 98 are like Grim Fandango, you know, those games that got pretty good ratings and sold a ton. This actually sold more and got better ratings. And I feel bad that I never played it. So, yeah.
It looks like Thief to me.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's definitely a different style. Like looking at the screenshots, I'm sort of surprised that it is a point and click adventure game because it looks almost like a stealth, like a Thief type of game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of some kind of strange hybrid that I've never seen before. So I'm really excited to try this one out. And it makes me even more mad at King's Quest VII. Shockingly, my second favorite game in the series, which I do not think people should start out with, is King's Quest from 2015. So this came out in three seasons on I think you could even get it on PS3, but I know it's on PS4 and many other systems, including PC. You could buy it in one cheap bundle now. It's a lot of it is kind of platforming, not really platforming, but you know, it's the side view of most platformers. Some of it's in 3D, and it really plays with time a lot. So it starts out in a very Princess Bride type way, where a very old King Graham is telling tales to his granddaughter, Gwendolyn. And the game is you acting out those stories that he's telling. And it plays with time a lot in a way that I think that last East game did, where the Lacrimosa of... where, you know, you could plant a seed and then in the right spot, and then in the future, that'll do something for you. It brings this really cool board game where you move these like chess units around in a certain way, and after a move, you could either move or shoot an arrow, and you have to like bounce arrows off shields to hit the other person's king or knight or whatever. And anyway, that was really well done. That could be almost, you know, a mobile game in itself. And this game wraps up the whole series really well. It leaves it open for new characters, which I'll really try not to spoil. And so many things from literally all the other games come to play in this. Multiple endings. It's a game you could play through many times. Who's the guy? Who's Doc Brown from Back to the Future?
Christopher Lloyd?
Yes, Christopher Lloyd does the voice of King Graham, and he does a fantastic job. I'm pretty sure the guy that does the inconceivable guy from Princess Bride does the voice of the villain in this. I'm pretty sure that's true. I could be wrong.
And, yeah, I can't. That's a name I'm going to totally blank on.
Yeah, yeah. Even though I've seen him 100 times at every Comic-Con I've been to.
Wait, did he die recommend this year?
What's it?
Did he die this year?
No, he's still around. He's still doing stuff.
Who am I thinking of?
This game I can't recommend enough, but definitely, this was my top game of 2015. This game killed it for me. It's beautiful. It plays well. It has replayability. The acting, the writing, all of it is great. Not one bad thing to say about it. I don't know. I don't think you were able to play this one in time, right?
No, I wasn't. It would be maybe like a game I would consider getting if it was on Switch.
Yeah, yeah. It might be, actually. It might.
I think it is. Hold on. I'm going to type loudly. Maybe it is. there is something called Knight's Quest on Nintendo Switch.
That's got to be shovelware.
Well, let's see here. Available now. It play as Rusty, a clumsy adventurer who accidentally sets about the end of the world.
So, King's Quest 2015 is actually in 5 chapters and an epilogue. I was wrong about the 3. It's on Steam, PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, Xbox One. So, highly recommended game. And, yeah, that's Activision. Developed by the Odd Gentleman, who I don't really recognize, but they did great in this. So, cool. Good for them. So, those are all the King's Quest games that are kind of canon. There are some fan-made games that are supposed to be really good. There are official VGA remakes of some of the originals that were in EGA and CGA. There are fan-made SVGA, kind of Windows, Linux versions of the first few games that are actually fantastic. You could download those for free legally and play those, and you will get pretty much the same experience as if you would, you know, with the real Sierra games. You could buy these in bundles on Steam. That's the way I would recommend doing it, because, you know, then you have the already configured DOS box, and it is really cheap. Here, let me look quickly at how much they are on Steam. So the last King's Quest game, the 2015 game, is $20 for all 5 seasons, and the King's Quest Collection, where you get all the other games that came out in 2006, is $9 right now. So you could get all the games for $9.
That's all the old games? I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So you even get the horrible Princess Bride games. So you get 1 through 7. So you don't get 8. But it plays with DirectX 9. So that means it'll work great with Wine. It'll work great in Windows 10.
Yeah. So, like, I'm looking at goodoldgames.com. They have 3 King's Quest packs right now. I think this is winter sale, so depending when you listen to this, it may or may not be available. King's Quest 1, 2, and 3 for $4.99. King's Quest 4, 5, 6 for $4.99. And King's Quest 7 and 8 for $4.99. Like, the 4, 5, 6 pack seems like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, yeah. And again, those free fan games, I definitely recommend. And the order I would play these in would be starting out with 1, I would love our listeners to do, but it also might be a turnoff because it's a bit primitive. So start with 1 if that doesn't bug you and you think you'll enjoy it. I would play 4, 3, 5, 6, and then 2015. Okay. If you want to get the best story. If you just want to play the best games, I would probably do 4, watch a video of 3, play 6, play 2015. I don't know if you have any recommendations.
No, I mean, because I've been more limited. So I typically recommend the two console versions because those are the easiest for me to play.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I guess it sort of depends what the experience is. Because like what we didn't really talk about is like the early games are on many, many computers. You sort of mentioned this with King's Quest 1, right? It like the first four games were ported to a lot of different systems. Five, you know, was like Mac and PC. But like if you really want to have a good retro computing experience, you can go get these for, you know, Apple II, Apple II GS, and so on. I saw like PC 98, you know, the Japanese PC, if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
Like there's just a lot, like a lot of different systems you can try it on. So for me, like I think, I don't know. I think a lot of people are wired to maybe have like a particular system or experience they want. So depending what system you want to play these on, right? You may not want to play all of them. You might just want to play the ones that were on the Coco.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So pretty much, yeah, one and two would probably be that. But I do want to say that if anyone on this show has anything to do in the entertainment business, King's Quest could be an amazing, you know, Amazon or Hulu or Netflix show. You know what I mean? It could also be really bad. I could actually ruin the series for everyone if that actually happened. But there's so much going on in this universe that if done well, it could be pretty fun. I don't think I have much more to say about it. I hope people enjoyed this, and I hope our listeners will email or reach out to us if you have King's Quest thoughts, what your favorite ones are, the ones you didn't like. If you really weren't into it before listening to this and you go back and play it, you know, even a year or 5 years from now, if we're still doing the podcast, you know, please still email us, email@retrogameclub.net. And yeah, any closing thoughts?
No, I would just say that if you're like me and you were kind of skeptical of going back to the series because you're more used to like the LucasArts style games, you know, go ahead and check out, like, I don't think there's any shame in just playing these with an FAQ open.
I'm so glad you said that. Yes, you'll get frustrated if you just want to get through the games. I actually recommend just doing that. You know, maybe try to figure out some of the stuff yourself, but if you just want to get through the games, I do recommend that. Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
No shame at all.
No, if your backlog is like as large as mine is, there is no shame in just clicking the button, the easy mode button, or having the walkthrough next to you.
Exactly. Yeah. And with DOSBox too, you can have King's Quest in a little window and have GameFAQs.com in another little window side by side. Well, our next episode is going to be really the first one in season three, even though this one technically is, but I hope everyone plays a lot of games while we're on a little break here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good time of year for that.
Yeah. So thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, thanks.